Hello and welcome to the first episode of Angels Costumes Behind the Scenes. I'm Jeremy Angel.
Jonathan Lippman.
And Richard Green.
This week's episode is an interview with Julian Day, who is a costume designer. You might know him from such productions as Rocket Man and Bohemian Rhapsody recently. How did that interview go?
It was fun. We had a great chat about process and a little bit of backstory about his early days as a trainee and then where he took his career and to the point where he is now as a designer of note, managing huge budgets and large costume teams. And of course, it doesn't start like that. You have to build up to it. And we talked about that process and what that means in terms of the industry today.
You know, before I started working at Angels, I actually worked with Julian. This is back in 2005, 2006.
No, I didn't. What was it?
It was a random music video that I was seconding. I don't actually remember what the music video was, but I remember Julian. He's the memory I actually have of that project. I was on set and he starts talking to me about his time at Angels, these stories he had about my grandfather, things that about my dad and how dad interviewed him and things that were said. And it was just a lovely chat. And what I realised then was just how much passion he had for costume, how much pride he had that he'd gone through Angels and how seriously he took everything. And listening to the interview, he's moved on so much as a designer and evolved and grown and become who he is, but he's still the same person he was then. He still has the same personality, the same traits, the same sensibilities.
I thought it was a very, very good interview, Jonathan. I think you and Julian obviously got on extraordinarily well and do get on extraordinarily well, and that came across in the interview. It was also interesting that, of course, he worked for us, which will come out in the interview, but we're talking about people that work at Angels and then go on to do other things, and that was an interesting aspect as well. And you didn't get to talk about Arsenal Football Club.
I mean, funny that, isn't it?
Because he is an Arsenal fan, isn't he?
No, he's not.
Oh, isn't he?
He's a Liverpool fan.
Oh, I thought it was Birmingham United.
Well, that's where he went to uni. I don't.
When it gets to football, that's my area of expertise at times.
Whenever the conversation turns to football, my eyes tend to cross. But. There we are.
I could talk about ice skating.
Really?
Yeah.
Ballet. Getting a whole new side. So we hope you all enjoy the interview with Julian. We've got some great interviews coming up in the next few weeks. We've mentioned before we've got an interview with Shelley Thompson, which Jonathan conducted as well. There's another interview with Daniel Angel, which Richard did.
And I interviewed Jonathan as well, which I thought was a very enjoyable one.
Yes, as a designer.
Theatre designer.
Rather than an Angels member of staff.
Yeah, with my other hat on.
Yes.
I've actually interviewed my father as well, and it's a fascinating look in the history of Angels and how he's built the company and the stock to where it is today. And there were still things that I never knew that came out of the interview. And there are other interviews coming as well that we've got set, so we hope you'll enjoy it. If there's anyone you'd like to hear us interview, obviously, please do let us know. But we hope you enjoy this interview with Julian and Jonathan.
Indeed.
Hello, Julian.
Hi, Jonathan.
Nice to chat with you.
Nice to chat with you too.
Just to give you our audience a little backstory, in the sense that you, as a costume designer working in the industry today, primarily in film and sometimes a little bit of television, but essentially, as a practitioner, you've built up a fearsome reputation of great respect within the industry from producers and directors, and your back catalogue of work is really impressive. And really what this is all about is for us to have a chat and to illustrate to people that want to come into the industry, whether, you know, students or art students, costume design students, that have got an idea in their head of what the function of a costume designer is on a production. And we can give them some insight into what that role is and the overall effect of that role on the production.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for even asking me to do this. I feel very privileged because there are so many costume designers out there. So I think it's very nice of you to ask me. And I think probably one of the things I would say is, I know you're speaking to other designers, and I think the whole, what I think is really nice about what we're doing is you'll probably get completely different responses from every person you speak to and how they get into the industry, what they think their role is, how they fulfill that role. So I think that will be very nice for all the people, aspiring designers, people aspiring to get into the industry. And I think that's what's really nice about it.
That's exactly why we've structured 5 specific questions and to have a chat around the 5 questions and to see the differences that will be answered by the different practitioners and their approach. You and I have quite a long association. We worked together as costumiers many years ago. And I'm always fascinated by seeing my contemporaries and people that I have built up long-standing relationships with and how they function. You know, we have a relationship that I hold very dear. We trust each other. And I can function for you as a production director at Angels when you've got your jobs that you need to have conversations about and get the process going through the building.
I think what you've hit upon is one of the most interesting and fundamental aspects to this industry and any industry. It's about trust. It's about relationships. It's about building bridges between people, because it is a business. It's the movie business, the film industry, but it's also deals with sort of artistry and emotion. And I think that's quite important to have good relationships with people, whether it's Angels, where I started my career, or whether it's with directors, producers, actors, people in the costume industry. I think that's very important. So it's very nice of you to mention the idea that about relationships.
Tell me, knowing that you initially trained at Angels as a costumier, what was your first introduction to the industry as a student? Can you remember back that far?
I'm not that old, I can remember. Yes, well, I this sounds really strange, but I'm gonna really go back a long way. I used to have Action Men and I used to make my own costumes for them. So I've always had this interest in clothes. I used to make my own clothes when I was, you know, 14, 15. I was always very much into clothes. And then I went to art college, and without realizing, I the work that I was doing propelled me into theatre design. So, and then I did a course at Birmingham to do theatre design, and I sort of veered towards the costume side there. And I guess so. I've always had this interest in clothes. I love clothes. I think, because clothes can say so much about oneself, how one dresses. They have an incredible language about them. Colours, textures, shapes, they all mean something different, and how you wear clothes. So that's always been my fundamental interest. And I've turned it, luckily, into my career, really.
Tell me then, on that basis, that in everything that you've described to me so far, in terms of the clothing that you made for your Action Men, and then how you considered your own persona in terms of how you dressed, and then what you then did for yourself, when did that shift into you understanding that all of those aspects could be shifted towards narrative and making the clothing that you're fascinated and perhaps obsessed with directed towards a story?
I don't think it was, there wasn't a eureka moment in a sense. I think it was a sort of gradual drip process of the idea of it, you know, I used to put on plays when I was a child as well, and used to make the costumes for that. So it sort of, everything went hand in hand. And then suddenly, I guess, when I finished my degree and sort of thought, well, what am I going to do with this? I came to work at Angels, and I guess that was the distillation of everything that I'd been doing up to then. And not just because we're talking, and Angels was very, very important, very integral to bringing what my love of clothes to the fact that I could turn that into a job.
Yeah.
I could turn that into a distillation of, you know, everything that I've done. So it was very, very important to me.
And was that a discovery that you made yourself, or was there a careers advisor, or was it something through the university? That, because a place like Angels, you would never have imagined could have existed if somebody hadn't told you, because the very idea of a company like Angels functioning in the way that they do is under the radar. You know, you would never think that an organization would be there to do what they did.
Well, I think one of the problems is, I think, you know, when you're at school, you know, what do you want to be? You know, a biologist, a chemist, a physicist, an English teacher, a writer. But, you know, no one ever says, well, you know, do you want to work within the film industry or so it's sort of, everybody knows it exists. And I didn't have a careers advisor. When I left college...
What actually was your qualification? What did you finish up with at Birmingham?
I got a first-class honours degree in costume design. In theatre design, sorry.
In theatre design. Okay, so it wasn't specifically costume design, it was a theatre design.
You know, one of the things I actually wanted to do was to design opera, which I've never done. And hopefully one day I will get to do that. But so I contacted costume designers. No, I didn't, you know, I didn't do, you know, set designers. And one of them kindly got me an interview to meet Tim Angel. And so I came along and sort of chatted and I got a job at Angels. And really that was actually how it was. So when I say how integral it was to me, it really was.
I remember your first day.
Really? Oh my God!
Yeah, I do. On your personal aesthetic was quite Japanese, was quite Oriental.
Yeah,
in the sense that your the cut of your clothes and the shape of them, and I just remember you quite clearly in my mind you had very wide trousers, soft fabrics, yes. and quite a soft wide shirt. Does that kind of ring a bell for the mid to late?
It certainly does. Yeah, it was a very stressful first day. You know, it was like, because I'd got a first class honours degree, and you know, everyone thinks they're the bee's knees when they've done that. And I remember coming in, and my first few days, Tim's father, Daniel, I was measuring some trousers, and I'd done all this work, and I thought I was, you know, creative, and I was measuring these trousers to see what the inside leg was, and he just sort of, you know, took me aside and said, that's not how you measure the leg of a trouser. And because I pulled it from the top downward. And it was brilliant, though. All these, and I think that's what I really have found, you know, all these little tips.
Back to basics.
Yeah. And actually, one of the things I really remember, and I do actually mention it quite a lot in interviews, is the idea, as I say, you know, ultimately, I'd finished my education, but as far as I was concerned, I, you know, got to the top of my education, having the best degree I could get, going to work for Angels, brilliant. And one of the first things, if you'll remember, in the basement there were bins full of evening dress trousers, and they were just, you know, like piled up. There were, you know, 100, 200, 300 in these bins, and the costumiers, probably you, would come along and pull out all the trousers to get to the ones that they needed, the right size. And my first job was to fold them all back up and put them back into the bins neatly. And that taught me something so, so brilliant, that the idea that, you know, you start at the bottom and you learn the basics.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important to any industry. And I think, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, they can come into any industry and go straight to the top. And you can do that. But you don't learn. You don't learn by your mistakes, and I've made many mistakes. And I think that learning from the bottom upwards is the best thing you can do. And I think I had such a great grounding at Angels. I got to design, you know, so many different periods, styles, meeting designers. It was absolutely brilliant.
And what would you say would be a noticeable difference between the industry as you knew it at that point of entry, as much as you would have been aware of it at that point, how you see it at this point, just in terms of the practice and how jobs evolve and how you see yourself with your teams and how you started and compared to how they start?
Well, I mean, I think I took a slightly different route than a lot of designers take. I think there are a lot of designers start off as assistant designers, and they work with a designer, and as that designer becomes more popular and does bigger and better jobs, they work with them. But I think from my point of view, I sort of realized I didn't want to be an assistant. I wanted to be you know, a designer. And so I started designing shorts and small films of my own, because that was the way I learned. I learned from, you know, from that way rather than doing it the assistant designer route. But I think going back to your question, the idea of how has the industry changed? I think people were willing to do a bigger array of jobs, and I think it's become more compartmentalized now.
I think that's a question of economics, because obviously in this day and age, it's much harder to survive as a youngster. Everything is so expensive. Whereas at the time that we were setting out and kind of creating our worlds, things were affordable. People would take risks.
Yeah, I think so. But I also think that the industry is so much bigger these days. There's so many more jobs around. You know, I'm not putting people down, but I think there's a lot of people in the industry that literally wouldn't have got a job, you know, 30 years ago when I first started. I wouldn't have got a job because there wasn't, you know, the jobs around. And so I think, you know, the whole industry has changed. And I think with the sort of introduction of things like Netflix and Amazon and all of these other sort of studios, there is so much more work around. And I think the industry has changed.
It does seem to be the capacity to take on more people to do work because of the expansion of the industry. So what people have had to, they've had to be fast-tracked into situations that they might not necessarily have been ready for in terms of experience and ability. Mm-hmm. Without becoming too complex about the whole thing, you're in a situation now where, back in the day, if you like, the industry was smaller, was more concentrated, and you had to hone your craft in a slightly more specialized way compared to today, where there's a much broader skill base. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. From my point of view, I mean, I guess as I say, I learned on the job. Really, I didn't sort of so in a sense, I can't say that anybody that comes in the industry shouldn't learn on the job. But I do think I had a very good grounding at Angels. I wasn't there for that long, but I think what I learned there was the basics of everything about costume. Because I think, you know, because the way that the costume department is structured, it's not just about the design side of it, you know, there's the standby side of it. And I think if people don't have an understanding of costume, they can't understand how to look after the clothes. Because ultimately, for years I've referred to things as clothes anyway, rather than costume, but let's call them costumes. And I think that if you don't understand why something does something, why you have a corset, or why you have a crinoline, it's incredible how many people actually don't know how to tie a tie. And they don't, not only do they not know how to tie a tie, but they don't know how to tie a Windsor, four in hand, half Windsor, etc., etc.
And when you notice that, do you stop and deal with that, or is it just an observation that you make that in the overall scheme of things, oh well, you know, okay, so I'll just sort of push that person to the back of the crowd?
Oh God, no, I would go over and show them how to tie a tie. I actually, it sounds terrible, but I get, you know, a group of people around and I show them how to tie a tie because I think most people want to learn anyway. That's why they're in it, because they want to learn. And also, it's about confidence. If you can do all these things, you'll be far more confident. Because also, film sets are very intimidating. I remember going, sort of upping, you know, let's say the budget of, the budget that I had on a film. And I remember walking on set I was doing a film called Our Kind of Traitor with Ewan McGregor. And I remember we were filming down by the embankment. And I walked on set, and there were cranes, and there were, you know, sparks everywhere. And there was like this massive crew. And I wasn't used to it. And I felt really intimidated. So I think that, you know, film sets, TV sets can be very intimidating. So the more you know, the easier it is. I mean, the amount of times I've been shouted at on a film set when, you know, I have done standby and I was looking after Bill Nighy, and we had a scene where it was raining. So the rain machine was on and I didn't want him to get wet. So I would go in with an umbrella and you know, stand over him to hold the umbrella. And the camera was kept on turning. They didn't cut. And I didn't realise this because I wasn't, you know, totally au fait with it. And I ran in and I put the umbrella and I just got absolutely shouted at. So I think the more you can learn,
Bill said thank you, but everyone else shouted at me. The better it is. And I think, you know, whether it's within the whole industry or just, you know, within the costume world, I think it's really important.
What initially excites you and draws you to a project? What would you say as an overall?
It's not necessarily an overall thing. It's a number of factors. It can be the director. I've done a couple of projects recently with a director called Dexter Fletcher, who I love. He's brilliant. He's enthusiastic. He gets my juices going. He loves clothes. So, you know, that can attract me. It can be the period. I've just done a film set in the 1930s. Which I'd sort of not really done before. And I was really excited about doing, because it's a beautiful period for clothes, men's and women's, and quite an interesting, innovative period as well, for women especially. So that really attracted me to that, and the director. I think the actual story and the director, those are the two things that really get me going.
It's interesting you say the 1930s job. Can I say what it is?
Yeah, of course.
Rebecca, the Daphne du Maurier novel. What I observed in one instance that I was particularly impressed with was how you completely understood the historical accuracy in terms of the shape and the line of clothing, and how appropriate the item of clothing would be for the person of that social grouping. I'm referring in particular to the blouses that we created for you for Kristen Scott Thomas. And how you were able to interpret the historical detail, but take your own view in terms of how you wanted the shape to work for her character and the colour. And kind of leads on to the next question that I wanted to ask you, was how important you consider the relevance of historical accuracy in the storytelling of a period drama.
Brilliant. I think that's a great question, because it's something that does sometimes slightly frustrate me. I think if you think about painters, all the great painters knew how to paint, but they would abstract things. They would make it their own. You know, you wouldn't have had some of the great artists in the world if they hadn't taken what they've known and deconstructed it. And so I think the same applies to pretty much anything. And certainly, from my point of view, and I know this, not all designers agree with this, but I think that if you know your period, you can then deconstruct it. Because I think sometimes the lines are far too rigid. And I think that if someone in 100 years' time was designing clothes set in 2020, you know, what would they look at? They'd look at reference, and they'd look at, but you know, you walk around the streets and there's such a variety of, yes, I know you go back 100 years and the variety was a lot less, but so what I'm really saying is, I think you should interpret the clothing. Yes, there is a clear set of rules, but I think also you should interpret those for the story, because I think the most important thing is the storyline and telling the story.
First and foremost, you have a responsibility to the aesthetic of the production that you're working on. And that's why I made that particular point, because one of your claims to fame, the amazing array of costumes on Rocketman, the Elton John biopic. And you and I both know that Elton's original stage creations were as brilliant as they were, and the concept of them were brilliant, and they're familiar to so many people. But in terms of the narrative of the story that you and Dexter were telling about that character, you needed to segue slightly away from the rigidity of the specifics of what he wore in the context of his concert performances, and lend it towards the theatricality of the piece that you were working on.
Absolutely. I mean, I think including that, I did film previous to that was Bohemian Rhapsody about Queen.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great example. You have the two films, and in the first film, the Bohemian Rhapsody, I adhered to the exact costumes, the stage costumes. When they were doing a concert in Rio, he wore, you know, leather trousers, the red leather trousers. So I adhered exactly to Live Aid, exactly. Because I think if you'd done something odd for Live Aid, it would have been the weirdest thing in the world. But as you say, for Rocket Man, you know, I went to Elton's archive. I looked at all the originals. I did, you know, huge amounts of research. But as you say, for the story, we had to deconstruct it. And it was about almost looking at his life through his sort of addictions. So we could change things. And I think it just was, I think it made the film more interesting.
No question. And especially to have him in that group therapy session, in that semi-fantasy, realistic environment, reflecting, was really what they call as a coup de théâtre, because I think that it put into context the poignancy of his character and the ridiculousness of his character, and at the same time the indulgence in terms of how people perceived him and how he saw at that stage in his life how he saw the rest of the world. And I think you both got that so right. And you know, Taron was obviously very happy to inhabit all of that.
Absolutely, yeah. No, he loved it, and he loves dressing up. And I think you know, slightly going away from that, it's quite interesting, you know, talking about the relationships you have with actors. I think my first and foremost relationship is the director, and obviously secondly you then include actors. And I think it's so important to make an actor feel comfortable. You know, one of the things that I've always said is that I want an actor to walk on set and feel totally inhabit their clothes, so they don't feel uncomfortable, or if they're meant to feel uncomfortable, then they should do. But, you know, there's nothing worse than them walking on, because I think everybody thinks that acting is sort of somehow that we could all do it. We just, you know, it's just saying lines. It's incredibly so, so difficult. And to have, you know, a crew of 100 people stood around while you're having an emotional scene, you know, crying or arguing or whatever it is. But I think, you know, if I can make sure they're happy and comfortable and feel that character, then it's vital for me. And I think, you know, I had a great time with Taron, going through the costumes, designing them, fitting them. And he was great. He loved it all. We were doing it on one of the hottest summers on record in this. It was, in fact, the hottest summer. We were doing it in a tent with no air conditioning. So I have to say, he was an absolute star.
Well, I think, you know, just to give you a little bit of credit here, I think that part of your success, and I think what your presence in terms of the collaborative process is vital, because you draw your performers into your world. And unlike, you know, it could be so easy and perhaps tempting for a designer to just present performer with a fait accompli and just, this is what you're wearing and this is where you'll be wearing it. And I believe that that's not what you do. And I think you do exactly the opposite of that. And you draw the performer into the world of the piece, and subtly throw in your ideas and your vision. And because you make it about the whole piece, you have them on side. And you realize, because you've done your homework and the preparation, that essentially that's the key to keeping everything flowing. And I think that it's not just about your relationship with the performers, but I think it's how you then enable your teams, Scheider, your supervisors, to follow that mantra and create a very harmonious, happy time.
Absolutely. It's so important. But just going back to your point just a few minutes ago, I had a very funny experience with an actor. I was fitting Stellan Skarsgård for Our Kind of Traitor. And I sometimes do, what I do is I'll have an idea in my head, and I sort of almost say it, and then an actor will say it back to me, like, oh, I think you should be wearing a blue suit, in a subtle way. And they'll say, oh, well, I think, you know, maybe I should be wearing a blue suit. And I'll say, that's a great idea. That's an absolutely fantastic idea. And I was having this really good fitting with Stellan. He's an amazing actor and a really incredible man. And we were sort of halfway through fitting, having a great time. And then he turned around and started laughing and said, you know what? I know exactly what you're doing. And you can't, I hope I'm allowed to say this, you can't bullshit a bullshitter. And it was one of the funniest things I've ever happened to me in a fitting, because he, you know, he completely engaged in the whole idea and understood what I was doing. And I think, as you say, getting people to engage in all of that is very, very important. But yes, going back to your idea of getting the team to engage with all of that. I think it's vital, because you do need harmony, and I think it's so important not to upset anybody, because there's so much emotion anyway. So yeah, I it's very important for me to feed that down to the team.
And it's also about accepting the responsibility of your position. That's where the respect and that's where the work ethic and the energy comes from, is that if it comes from the top. And it's a very familiar trait for people to feel that they're not part of a, you know, that they're not being drawn into a world and a team for all the various reasons that we know about. But when it does work, and I would say in most instances, in your experience, it does work on that basis, they suddenly get an insight into how brilliant this whole effort can be. And it becomes very inspiring. Have you got a favourite? Have you got like a film that you put in, on your mantelpiece as being the one that sort of ticks every box?
I will answer that in one sec. I just want to go back to what you were talking about, the idea of the inclusion of people into the department. One of the things that I actually love doing is I love crowd fittings, because, you know, doing principles is one thing, but there's so much more scrutiny, whether it be through the producers, the studio, the director, the actors. There's so much more scrutiny, and that's fine, and I get that, and I love that. But dealing with the crowd, it's not necessarily being more creative, but there's a lot more freedom to feel and do what you want. And what I love is actually going into the crowd fittings and fitting with all the other fitters. And, you know, and I think in some respects, I try to, where we have, you know, trainees in the department, and I always try to get them to start fitting and, you know, help with the fitting, because it's such good fun. And I think I try to include everybody in the process of what I'm doing. And, you know, we have meetings maybe on a Monday morning where I include the whole department, not just, you know, the supervisor or the assistant costume designer. Because I think if everybody knows, then they understand. And I love that transparency, in a sense, of what the department does.
Do you call those meetings tone meetings?
Depends. We do tone meetings where, you know, I'll talk. But I think just a, you know, general, you know, Monday morning, everybody's come back from the weekend, and
this is the week ahead.
Yeah, the week ahead. And just so everybody is on, so the buyer will understand what the cutter, the cutters have got to do. So there's an understanding of why they're buying that for that, and then they're connecting everybody up. So so it's not about the idea of being in control. It's about passing that control. You know, obviously I am the head of the department, and I will take the good and the bad side of it. But it's about, so everybody understands, and it's more of a web then, rather than just doing straight lines. It's more interconnecting, and I think that really works. So I want people to feel more invested in the project. And I think if when they're watching the film and the final results, they can go, I did that, I understand. You know, it's so much, it's about getting people invested in the project. But going back to, have I got a favorite? It's very, very difficult. Well, I mean, because I love films for different reasons. I love some of the films I've done because I love the clothes. One of the films that I would say that I love, I did a film called The Last Resort with a Polish director called Paweł Pawlikowski. My budget was £50. My costume budget was £50. And one of the reasons I love it is because, you know, there's an actor, Paddy Considine, and he has to wear this outfit. And I got married in white Levi jeans, and I used those jeans on him. They wouldn't fit me now, but they fitted Paddy. And I used some of my own clothes. I went to charity shops. I stretched the idea of how to costume this film on £50 and borrowing clothes. And so for me, it was a real, you know, I work on films that I can, you know, I quite, you know, fairly big budget. So I can go out and I can be extravagant and I can buy a suit for X, Y, and Z. But that one, I really had to, you know, think about what I was doing. I have to think about what you're doing in every film. But so that was one of my favourites. I do love, as you mentioned, Control. It was a film shot in black and white, which is always interesting to do, to get the tone right. So, but I it's difficult to say, because every project that I do, and I know it's a get out, you know, it's a bit of an easy answer, but every film or every project that I've done has some meaning, and it's special to me.
I think it's very interesting how, as your career has developed, you know, you've got the movies that you've made with Ron Howard, Pawlikowski. Is that the correct pronunciation?
I think it's Pawlikowski.
Pawlikowski. I was watching. I know you didn't work on this, but I was watching Cold War.
Oh yes.
Having missed it when it first came out, I was watching it the other day, and there's such a all of these auteurs that you've worked with have all got such a completely different aesthetic. So I'm not surprised that you would find answering that very specific question a tricky one, because, you know, even up to the point now where you're working with Dexter, the scale of the projects and the approach is so completely different. And I'm very interested to see how it works out with Rebecca.
Yes.
And working with that director, because again, it's a completely, they're very strong-minded creatives in terms of how their careers have been built up on the aesthetic, and obviously clothing being a very important part of their storytelling. Just because I sort of really need to kind of wrap it up, and as much as I've loved chatting about all of this, we need to slightly draw to a close. What would you say was a single piece of advice that you would give to somebody who wanted a career like yours?
I'm just going to go back very, very quickly. What's really nice about this industry is that, having done 4 films with Pavel, and his daughter used to come on set and, you know, watch filming, and now I've just designed a film for her. She's a film student and is going on to, which you kindly helped out on. And so it's that idea that it's a really growing industry, and it's organic. And I love the idea that, you know, it flourishes, and, you know, people come in and out of it. And that's what I really love. One piece of advice I would give to anybody wanting to
specifically be a costume designer.
To be a costume designer, it's a general thing, but it's perseverance. Never, never, ever think the door is closed. And it is actually true. I think that if you decide you want to do something, and I believe anyone can do this, if you have the foresight and are not put off by people, don't be put off. Believe in yourself, because everyone has the ability to do it. They genuinely, genuinely do. And I think that I always encourage people to do that, because if I'd sort of given up when I could have, when I thought that my career wasn't doing this or that, or there was nothing, I wouldn't be where I am now, or wouldn't hopefully go on to do what I'm going to do. But I would say never, ever give up, and you know, never be put off by anybody. Just go back again and again and again.
I think that's a very sound piece of advice, and I would sort of consider that to be invaluable if I was at that point where I that, you know, things were either up against me or I was just starting out. So, Julian, thank you really so much. I enjoyed myself, and I really appreciate your time.
No, I as I said at the beginning, I really appreciate doing this. I never thought you know, I'd be being interviewed for this when I first started at Angel. So
go on, how many years ago?
I think it's about 34 years ago, quite a long time. So, you know, and I think, you know, both you're a designer as well, and I love your work. I think your work is incredible. You know, it's funny, looking at my work, and I see you work, and I think, I look at myself, and I consider myself a bit of an amateur when I see you work. So, you know, no, genuinely, we'll have this conversation at another time, but genuinely, I feel that way. So, but it's very nice to be talking with you, especially, as I really admire and respect you. So thank you very much for doing this, and good luck with everything.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks, Julian.
You take care.
So that was great, just chatting away to Julian. And there was such a lot of information in those minutes, just getting the process out there.
The interview that you just had, or you had with Julian, was really interesting. I thought it was great the way you both talked about the process of design, and the way the other thing that came across very strongly was just how much you admire each other's work and enjoy working together, which is very refreshing. It's nice to hear that sort of respect.
I felt that it was worth explaining that, you know, as we made it quite clear through the chat, that we've known each other for a long time, but also it's typical of our relationship that, in the same way that your relationship with your customers and Jeremy's with his, in that you do build up relationships in the professional sense, and it's about understanding their issues, and if they're straightforward with what they need to achieve, you can respond accordingly.
Yes, fundamentally, you need them to tell you the truth and let you know where they think their issues are, whether those issues are the fact they don't think they've got enough money for costume hire, or they don't think there's enough stock for costume production that they're doing. And you're right, it is this business is incredibly reliant on trust and communication and and just enjoying the work. You know, as we very often say, it's not life and death. It's an extraordinarily important industry, and you know, people are dealing with budgets that would let you buy a large estate down in Sussex sometimes, you know, complete with own apple orchard. That's the sort of money that some of these people are dealing with. So trust is an incredibly important part of what we do, isn't it? Developing that trust and not abusing it.
And I think the other thing which was lovely to come out of it is how he likes to show people can further their training and their education and teach them, if they don't know how to tie a tie, how to tie a tie and do it not in a way that's demeaning or anything like that. It's teaching everyone for the better of them and the project you're on, which
for the whole department and the whole production.
I think that's an important point, because you can only be in that position when you are assured of your own artistry and ability. And I think, of course, there is doubt and that sense of, am I doing the right thing in terms of process? But essentially, it's about separating that from that personal issue to being responsible for a team. And as the person responsible for that team, as you'll discover along the way with all our various chats, that you are beholden to not just the production, but to the people that are working with you, to ensure that everybody is moving forward in the most positive way.
Yes.
I think that leads in nicely to the next interview we're going to release, which will be your interview with Shelley and all about the training programme and the apprenticeships.
Yeah, and the expectations therein.
Well, we hope you all have enjoyed this episode. We will give you a small sample of Jonathan's interview with Shelley just at the end here, and we look forward to speaking to you all next week.
Yep, see you soon.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
One of the main reasons that we wanted to do an apprenticeship programme in the first place was to prove that you don't need to go to university to be a good costumier. There seemed to be a huge belief that in order to do well, you needed a degree. For what we do, I strongly disagree with that. And we were able to offer really fabulous vocational on-the-spot training that, you know, threw people in at the deep end, gave them a wonderful cross-section of knowledge and experience. And then when they came out the other end, they'd been working in industry, they'd been receiving an apprenticeship salary every month, and were in the perfect position to be offered a job.